I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about a new initiative to help young people affected by mental illness. Ben's Ranch Foundation will put troubled teens into settings in which animals and nature can help soothe what ails them. The inspiration for the foundation was a young man whose life was aided by just such an approach. My guest is the founder of the Ben's Ranch Foundation and the father of that young man, Rose McVeigh. Please join this important conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a new initiative to help troubled young people, those affected by mental illness. The new initiative is Ben's Ranch Foundation, and I'm going to be talking with the founder of Ben's Ranch Foundation, who also happens to be the father of Ben. We're going to talk first about what the foundation attempts to do and then dive into the personal story that inspired it. My guest is a familiar face here in Indiana, Rose McVeigh, businessman. He's been a candidate for political office and has been a pretty prominent presence in the civic life of Indianapolis and Indiana for quite some time. Rose, welcome to the program.
John, it's a pleasure, and appreciate the chance to tell our story.
Certainly. So I tried to introduce Ben's Ranch Foundation without giving away too much of that story.
Yeah.
Could you talk with people a little bit first about what Ben's Ranch Foundation is?
Sure. It's easy to misread it a little, John, so it's a good question to start off with. I think, first of all, it's a nonprofit 501c3 charity. Second, its first programmatic mission is to deliver a program for teens, starting off with 15 to 18-year-olds, who are struggling with certain types of mental health conditions. And we know that data shows that one in five young people, which is roughly a mirror of the whole population, struggles at some point with some kind of mental health challenge. We do this in our first initiative by trying to match them with individual farm and ranch families where they can go and live and work for at least a summer or a period of weeks and maybe longer and unwind, learn some new skills, get away from their sources of stress, and enjoy the benefits of a very affordable, accessible way to unwind and to heal and to hopefully build some self-esteem along the way. So this summer, we're attempting to crawl into existence with our piloting effort on that program. That will continue on through the winter, and then we're already being asked to consider some expansions and other ways we might be able to leverage this concept. So the premise is, of course, that if we can get kids away from siblings and parents and sources of stress and engage their senses with physical labor, with outdoors, with livestock and nature, we begin to leverage some of that natural resource to their gain and do so in a way that, and this is important, that isn't very prohibitively expensive. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately for anybody listening who has gone through this as I have, you learn very quickly that your options for these kids are very few and far between, and the ones that are out there are often out of reach financially in the form of very scary, faraway residential programs. So by using and leveraging volunteer family farmers and ranchers and other folks involved in agriculture, we hope to make it very accessible to folks of all walks of life from any demographic category, and certainly at-risk teens that might not have other options available to them if not for something like this.
So, and we're going to talk about the logistics of how the program works and all of that later, but I think we'd be doing a disservice to the audience. If we didn't talk, and to your son's memory, if we didn't talk a little bit about Ben.
You bet.
So tell me about Ben.
Well, thank you. 2 years ago, we lost Ben, and that followed about a decade of battle with bipolar disorder. Ben was diagnosed at about 14, which was pretty early, and this has been a few years back, so it was at a time when we didn't know a whole lot about bipolar in young people. And along that path of his childhood, he and I shared a passion for horses and the outdoors and so forth, thankfully. So when things became so crisis-like that we just really didn't know where to turn next, we experimented with talking to a ranch in Wyoming about him having a summer stay there to work and get away. And that was so wildly successful when they accepted that it turned into an 18-month stay, and we actually took him out of his senior year in high school and left him there, where he worked and injured himself and built skills and froze and you know, sidestepped rattlesnakes and everything you do out on a ranch. And he loved it so much that when he finally came home 18 months later, he came home charged up to get his life back together and kind of reboot it, if you will. And he went on to pursue and achieve his high school diploma, followed by night school at Ivy Tech and other attempts to begin to build a life. And I will tell you that my family and I believe that if he hadn't been for that period on that ranch, that story would have been very different. We thought we were at a point where we just did not have any other choices, that a crisis was imminent, and we were already in a terrible situation. Families were being torn apart, just really chaos reigning. And so, as a lot of parents do, we really rolled the dice with that experiment, knowing that the other pathways forward were probably even more scary. But it worked real well, and we made note of that when we brought him home. Years later, he would die of an accidental overdose. But doing so while he was living on his own, working, pursuing his education, it was really a byproduct of him medicating from the lingering effects of bipolar, but at the same time, really more of a random loss. And it did not take away from the impression we had of what a tremendous impact that experience on that ranch had for him. And so we're trying to duplicate that now for others. We're trying to make the power of nature and outdoor life available to more kids at a vulnerable time in their life, when we can hopefully change that trajectory in their life just ever so modestly in the right direction, and do so in a way that's sort of preventative in its effect. And do so in a way that's natural and leverages kind of a holistic approach and isn't dependent so much on just medication and doctor's offices and so forth.
We are talking with Brose McVeigh about the foundation. He is set up in part in memory of his son, Ben, that seeks to help troubled young people deal with mental illness. It's called Ben's Ranch Foundation. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Bros, because there doubtless are going to be some parents out there who are dealing with similar things. And I'm going to say, as I always say to people, when we're talking about something that is this personal, and there are a few relationships that are more personal than the parent-child one, if any of these questions gets too intrusive, please tell me that. But to the degree you talked about how difficult things were getting at home, you talk a little bit about what the manifestations of that difficulty were, so that if there are signs here that some other people who are in your situation and really could use some help, if they hear it and they recognize it, they might be able to reach out.
Yeah, it's a terrific question, John, because as tough as it is to talk about, I really feel like that's the way we're going to help people, and I'm happy to do it. first I might say that the cycle that we experienced with Ben, and unfortunately we're beginning to experience it with other members of our family, and we hear it now testified to us from parents all over the country now that are coming to us from the foundation, through the foundation, to talk about their story. The cycle that begins with these kids is so common and familiar that you can almost begin to finish the parents' sentences. So it's something we can begin to recognize and think about because it's so familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, in my amateur opinion, is that there's some underlying problem. Let's call it disease, malfunction, disorder, what have you. Could be depression, could be anxiety. You know, the mental health community is getting better at not using real oversimplified labels for these things. There's sort of a spectrum of issues. But it begins with something organic, something real and objective, like a mental health problem in the brain. But then it quickly compounds itself over and over in this snowballing effect that really results more from the secondary and third degree effect of all that. And it's namely fueled by a loss of self-esteem that comes with grades starting to fail and friends starting to break away and ball teams being lost when we don't make a cut or school failures that compound themselves. And all of that immediately accelerates all this into a situation where these teens naturally seek either drugs or alcohol or people that feel the way they do and often get influenced by tough circumstances. It can manifest itself later into criminal activity. Certainly acting out against parents is very common part of the theme. These kids are often hard to recognize at school or at church or at work. But when they get home and they're around their parents, that's when they let all the fear and anger and resentment they feel out. And it's often most ugly behind closed doors in the home. And, of course, for decades, we've been, as a society, I think, hesitant to talk about this stuff, you know, to our friends and neighbors and family members. So often we exacerbate the problem by kind of keeping it behind closed doors. The next big characteristic that I've seen in our case and in so many families I talk to is that parents don't have a playbook for how to deal with this. It's hard enough to be a parent in today's society without mental health. But so they begin to react to the kids early on, sometimes for years, as if it's a behavioral issue or a parenting issue or that the kid's just a bad kid. And there's an awful lot of damage done in the early hours and months of this because we really don't understand what we're dealing with. So those are some of the things that we could expand on it after the break. But I think, you know, I'd like to come back to that with you, but it's a story that I think if we break the cycle early enough, we can really change where it heads.
So you say he was what, about 14?
14.
What were the first signs?
A real marked change in behavior, even so much, and this is kind of tough to remember, but he was always interested in art. He always had a very soft, beautiful personality, and yet all of a sudden his artwork turned very dark. And there was some acting out and some personality changes coming over him and some school problems beginning. So it was pretty marked. And, you know, as I said a moment ago, we started to deal with it kind of on the behavioral and parenting level. And that seems natural. But oftentimes with these kids, it's really leads to a lot of confrontation, a lot of top-down, you know, coercive kind of parenting, and that can often exacerbate and push those kids away further. So we always say to parents, just get out and get some professional help first and then think about it later. You know, get some help, talk to people, be informed.
So it sounds like one of the signs is that he you know, there was manifestation of some anger that you really hadn't seen before. And you know, as you say, his form of expression was art, and that took a darker turn than you were used to. Were there any other? We've got just a few seconds, but are there any other obvious warning signs that?
Well, I think a withdrawal, you know, a turning inward, a bit of an antisocial approach to adults and so forth, and the very early signs of really feeling rejected by some friends and so forth, which, boy, that is just a catalyst that heads them in the wrong direction.
We are talking with Brose McVeigh about the foundation he has set up, in part to honor his son's memory, but to help troubled young people who are dealing with mental illness. It's called Ben's Ranch Foundation. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Ben's Ranch Foundation. It is a new initiative designed to help young people affected by mental illness by putting them in settings in which animals and nature can help soothe what ails them. My guest is the founder of Ben's Ranch Foundation, who is also the father of Ben, and that is Brose McVeigh, you know, Indianapolis, Indiana businessman, political candidate, and civic leader through the years. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Certainly.
I just want to say I have a son with autism. He's on the autism spectrum, and it was hard when we had to get him diagnosed early. Diagnosis started as early as 6. We finally got him really balanced and well balanced by about age 10. But early on, the people that were at the treatment center didn't really believe us that he had these big anger explosions, because whenever he went for the visit, he was all nice and quiet and calm. And then one day he had an episode there, and the entire place freaked out. They offered us numbers for taking him to an emergency hospital and this, and we're all like, we see this every day. And so I really feel for your guest, and I'm really happy about the fact that he's creating this foundation as a possible outlet for these kids, a place where they can go to get new experiences and maybe just recharge their life and find a direction that really wasn't there before. Because it's so hard as parents of these kids understand, having other people understand what you go through every day, just what you're seeing. So I just wanted to thank him for his efforts and kind of share my story out there.
Thank you very much for calling and for sharing your story with us, David. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So in terms of the, you know, the solution we are talking about, I'm going to ask overall, because I have heard anecdotal studies, actually stories like this, a friend of a distant family member had a similar situation, you know, a daughter in this case, took an abrupt turn, and grades dropped suddenly. The, you know, there were some run-ins with drugs and drinking, and right on the edge of some serious involvement with law enforcement, and the parents were at wit's end, and they, you know, finally shipped her off to work with horses, and there was a complete turnaround. A couple other anecdotal stories I've heard like that, but have there been studies, or is there any research that takes this beyond the anecdotes to show us that this approach works?
Yeah, boy, I love to hear those stories because they get me out of bed in the morning when this seems like such a long road ahead to get all this to work for these kids. But, you know, I was just peeking at a study that is coming out of a university in California where they're using vets coming back from military service in that particular case, and their initial data, which is now being vetted by peers and so forth, showed that they had a 35% decrease in PTSD characteristics among vets after 1 2-day outdoor boating trip, for example.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, though, I'm not finding a lot of good data, and I think we're all hungry for more. But I do see a lot of anecdotal evidence that the world's catching on to the power of nature and the power of outdoors and the power of getting back to the basics. For example, there's a huge explosion of therapeutic riding programs mm-hmm. for folks, adults, kids, physical disabilities as well as mental, emotional. There are more outdoor adventure programs for vets and others. And certainly there's plenty of other programs. What's unique about what we're trying to do here, John, and I don't want to get away from your good question about data, is we're trying to mainstream these kids into a volunteer natural setting of an individual family farm or ranch or agricultural operation or something like that, because we feel like for many of them, if we jump into something like a full-blown residential treatment program or what have mm-hmm. you, we're really bringing with it the stigma and the trauma that really goes with that for the kids. For some of them, both based on diagnosis or where they are in that cycle I described, that may be the best way to go. But it's terribly expensive, and there's some consequences to it that are not always good, because it's, you know, it's an environment of institutionalization, no matter how natural the setting. So we're trying to get these kids a chance to feel good about themselves, get out there, and we're also trying to avoid some of the horrific amounts of cost and administrative red tape and so forth that go along. And so we screen these kids carefully. But I think, you know, what we're tapping into, to circle back to your question, is really not well documented, but yet we all know at some gut level that it's mm-hmm. just common sense that if we can get folks back at that developmental stage in their life, outside with nature, working, engaging their mind and bodies, and taking their mind off their problems, it's going to be good for them. It may not be the end all for these kids, and it may not work for all of them, but you know, there's plenty of anecdotal evidence, and I think there'll be more academic data coming along with it soon. And so we're going to hope to be part of that. We're going to be trying to capture data along the way and help contribute to that. But
will you participate in research, or will you help fund it through the foundation?
Well, we may, as resources allow, but as a minimum, John, we're going to capture data and contribute it to the debate.
Okay.
And both for our funders and for our families, and really for our own validation that we're in, to guide our hand, if you will. So it's very, very important that we have sort of outcome-based data, both pre- and post-experience surveys, debriefing of parents, the kids themselves, and the caregivers will be kind of cornerstones of our data capture. But I think it may eventually be a platform where we could actually be a part of research projects as well. I did want to mention for those that are listening that the Sierra Club is working on a program now called the Great Outdoor Lab, for example, to go mm-hmm. back to your question, John. And it's a body of work and a part of a broader body of work where some of the universities now are doing serious work on measuring the mm-hmm. power of outdoors, the power of nature, the power of physical labor and so forth to help people with a variety of challenges. It's long overdue. There was a wonderful article that we posted on our Facebook page, and I want to mention to the audience that we're at bensranch.org, that's talked about, for the first time I've ever read, doctors prescribing outdoor therapy in mm-hmm. lieu of drugs. Now, we're not a shop or an organization that's anti-pharmaceutical. We know mm-hmm. they can play a powerful role and do every day in saving kids. But we're also certainly an advocate for a well-rounded, balanced, common sense strategies to help people. Mm-hmm. And it can't always stop, you know, begin and end at the pharmacy. So that article talked about having doctors actually think about ways to advocate for and literally prescribe outdoor therapy. So again, these are anecdotal signs that we're on the right track. We feel good about it. We hope the data catches up with us in time.
Gotten an email from a listener named Christina. And again, if you want to reach out and join the conversation, by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Christina writes, "My heart goes out to Brose and his family on the loss of their dear son, Ben. Mental illness is such a challenging condition to navigate. I commend him for recognizing the healing power of nature, hard work, and the non-judgment of animals. They need to be cared for regardless of whether your mood or your personal preference. A being relies on you for their well-being. We city and suburban dwellers are so removed from these responsibilities and this way of life and its benefits. Kudos for making these experiences available to youth from all backgrounds. I hope many people contribute to continue your mission. Well, that's got to feel good to hear.
Yeah, it does. I appreciate it. And, you know, it's not the topic of a lot of coffee table or dinner party conversations, but I do think there's a huge number of folks out there in our community who have experienced something like we're talking about. I will say to Christina's point, too, that one of the things we're proud of with this model is that, you know, we're targeting this year Marion and Hamilton counties and this broader mm-hmm. community, and we specifically are trying to work with Eskenazi and mm-hmm. Midtown Mental Health and others to make sure that kids with tough upbringings, with no financial resources, maybe without the benefit of an advocate family member there for them, are very much in our sights. And we want to give all kids, you know, African-American young females are at one of the highest risk categories in the country for teen suicide, for example. And we mm-hmm. really, you know, if we do nothing else today, we really want to talk about the idea that mental health problems are really the secret X factor behind so many of the things you and I might talk about on this show every day. Crime,
yes.
Teen suicide, criminal justice problems, drug abuse now. And, you know, we as a society, we're getting a little bit better, but we're just not doing enough to really make this a filtering, you know, threshold question at all levels of our society, in schools and doctors' offices and so forth, yet enough.
How much of this, the point, one of the things that struck me with Christina's email is when we think of the outdoors, we think of, you know, the physical components, the fact that there is something stress relieving. But I had not thought in the context, when she talks about the non-judgment of animals.
I
thought, okay, that's a powerful insight.
Oh, it's terrific, and it's part of a bit of a mosaic of factors that led us to try this. If I could just take a moment on that.
Please.
One of them is that interaction with animals. It might be a wild animal at a zoo, or it might be a farm animal, or it might be a pet at home. Again, more and more we're seeing that, you know, senior citizens struggling with cognitive disorders are being introduced to dogs and pets, you know, and we're using animals more wisely in therapeutic ways all across society. So it's absolutely true. I don't know how we quite explain the power of it, but there's something there that we want to harness and is very much behind what we're doing. It's at work in our therapeutic riding community I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier. It's at work every day on these farms where kids are growing up, mm-hmm. Showing 4-H calves. And, you know, in Indiana, you know, we're blessed with more, to Christina and David's point, folks that have a chance to touch that world, whether it's growing up on a farm or driving out to see the cousin during summer break. But by golly, for most of folks, if you think about it statistically in the world, they never see a farm. They rarely play with a farm animal. So we're trying to break that. I wish in a way we could have every kid have a little bit more of this, you know, and not wait until we've got a crisis or a mental health or a drug problem to start thinking about how we can leverage, you know, mm-hmm. our farms and the outdoors and even our state parks. And, you know, I try to talk school administrators into getting them out of the classroom and taking them to the community, you know, creek to talk about biology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all around us. It's part of our history. It's part of who we are as a species, and yet sometimes we close the doors in our buildings and leave it outside, and then we wonder why we're a little neurotic and having trouble.
We are talking about Ben's Ranch Foundation. It's a new initiative designed to help troubled young people by connecting them with nature and animals. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Thomas has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a personal and then a more on-topic question. Mr. McVeigh, did you grow up in Mud Creek Valley?
No, although a lot of my critics would say that, you know, I grew up in the country, that's for sure. Okay. But no, I don't think so.
Okay, so that doesn't apply. But I have a friend who has very significant OCD issues, and I was wondering, is that in the spectrum, or how? Where does OCD issues fall in the autism spectrum?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Thomas.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Well, I can sense in Thomas's question a lot of, you know, eagerness and maybe a little pain and anxiousness, and I wish so much that I had the training and the background to do justice to his question. I will say that in our world with Ben's Ranch, we have a very painful disciplinary choice to make. We can't be everything to everybody, and as we started to build the screens and the protocols that we will use to pick winners and losers, if you will, we realized that we were having, by necessity, at least at the beginning of our program, to exclude some categories of diagnosis, for example, because they just really didn't fit with this volunteer setting and the physical aspects. But OCD, as a general rule, I think is very much in the category of what we're talking about. More and more the mental health community and the medical community is talking about mental health as sort of a cocktail mix they refer to as the spectrum. And it means that everything from behavioral and upbringing and demographic to the more chemical side are part of what affects these people. But I will touch on OCD and Thomas's question a little bit more as we have time here. But,
we've got time.
Okay. But I think that, you know, what I would like to throw out there, again, with qualification that I'm not a physician, I'm not a mental health professional, is that, you know, terminology can get in our way, because I know with our kids and with Ben, you know, there was a variety of factors there. And oftentimes we talk about mood disorders, for example, nowadays, instead of just bipolar and what have you. We talk about a compulsion and impulsivity, whether we're talking about attention deficit disorder or some other. So oftentimes these are really more characteristics or manifestations of a pretty complicated diagnosis. And they're not to be seen as just black and white labels by which we ought to drive everything. And I think OCD, though, lives right in the middle of all that.
We've gotten an email from a regular listener, Jerry. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, please make sure to tell us how specifically we may assist the Ben's Ranch Initiative.
Well, great. I probably designed that question. We are in that formative period, and our mornings, believe me, with all humility, I wake up and don't know where we're going to go with this, because it's just flat out hard. You know, not only is it new and controversial, but whether you're a farm family considering helping us or a parent, you can imagine. You can imagine sending a child off to a unknown farm or ranch, sometimes states away, is a scary notion. But we need everything. We need volunteers. We're going to have some of those volunteers graduate up to be on our board or to really run major initiatives for us. We need money. It's fully tax deductible. We need medical professionals and healthcare professionals to be technical advisors. We need troopers on the ground who can help recruit for us, both on the farm and on the mental health side. So I would just tell folks that have any curiosity, maybe they have a little skill or gift they can work from home. You know, we need researchers and writers and marketers. Just hit us on the website. Let us know what your heart tells you, and we'll figure out a way to get you involved.
Go ahead and give them the URL again.
Yeah, it's bensranch.org.
We're talking with Bros McVeigh about Ben's Ranch Foundation. It is the new initiative he set up in honor of his late son, Ben. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Ben's Ranch Foundation. It's a new initiative that's been set up to help troubled young people, those affected by mental illness, by putting them in contact with the healing effects of nature and animals. My guest is the founder of the foundation, who set it up in honor of his son, Brose McVeigh. Ben was his son. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named William has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Lori, welcome to the program.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly.
I am on the road, so if I lose contact, so be it. I'm driving southward from Indianapolis.
Okay.
I just first of all wanted to say to the guest how thrilled I am that he's starting this. I am a retired psychiatrist. I've lived in Indianapolis for about 10 years, so I didn't really I did a little bit of work here and then retired, but I you know, worked all the rest of my life in psychiatry and also have a loved one who has been through a lot,
mm-hmm.
including residential care, including whatever you call it. There's so many different, the schools in the mountains, you know, you name
yeah.
it. Bipolar is the best we can call it. She's an adult. She's functioning. She's not saying there aren't bumps in the road, but I will say that the outdoor program was good. It was important. I think that there is a great need for that, and I also wanted to give a shout out that he mentioned the Sierra Club, because I'm very involved in, I do a lot of the outdoor hiking programming, making sure people lead hikes and get trained to lead hikes. And I wasn't able to go on it, but we had a family oriented hike last weekend in Bean Blossom Bottoms, just on the mm-hmm. boardwalk. And, you know, getting families to get outdoors with their kids, whatever kind of kid you have, is good. And the other thing is that we just worked so hard to save the Crown Hill Woods, which are, you know, an old growth forest remnant right on the edge of Crown Hill Cemetery. They were going to use it to build a national cemetery, take all the old trees down, or a lot of them, and the rest mm-hmm. would have died by, because they all are connected, as you know, nature mm-hmm. doesn't live, you know. Anyway, so that was the other thing that I just, the veterans with PTSD who found out they were going to lose this forest, who would say, I need to walk in here, it's healing. And they talk about wood bathing, wood nature, forest mm-hmm. bathing. I don't mean naked, but, you know, that's mm-hmm. something that in other countries people do. They call it, it's like therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just rings so true to my heart to hear this, man, I'm so sorry that you lost your son, and I know how close we came, and you know, I never know every day, but you know, I just, and also as a physician, and perhaps I'd like to donate to you, and perhaps there's some way. I'm not board certified in adolescent psychiatry, but I still have my license, so maybe there's some way I can help in some way, because I am just thrilled.
I'll tell you what,
doing this. Thrilled.
Okay, I was going to say, Lori, I think we have your information, but if not, if you would send an email to our email address, we will get it into Brose's hands.
Okay,
so he can talk with you.
I gave the lady who answered the phone my phone because
great.
I'm driving, so I can't. You know,
great, we will give that to Brose
okay.
as well. Then, thank you very much
okay.
for the call and for sharing your
thank
story
you.
With us.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye. So it sounds like you're picking up some recruits here.
Well, Dr. Lori is not as thrilled as I am to hear from her. She's just exactly what we need, just what the doctor ordered for the Ben's Ranch Foundation. You know, before we run out of time today, John, first of all, I can't wait to meet Lori and get her involved, and we need her kind of enthusiasm. But she did touch on something I want to say. You know, I would beg of anybody listening that's on a school board or a parent or a county council or whatever. You know, we spend trillions in our society, thankfully, for parks, recreation, trails. Let's leverage them for our kids. Let's get programs designed around them from the get-go, from preschool on. And if we did it more, it's a natural classroom. And it's we've already paid for it two or three times over. I'm an old public policy junkie, as you know. And oftentimes it sits mothballed for a few ambitious hikers or whatever to enjoy. But while our kids are a few blocks down the street in boxes made of concrete, let's teach science and archaeology and recreation and PE and math outside, you know, more often. There's so many things we can do, and the Sierra Club and a lot of organizations are starting to turn their mission towards more education and interaction like that and programming, and I'm so thankful for it. But I would just charge people in their own life to think about how they could do that in their school board, in their city park, in their neighborhood. How can we get back to getting kids out there? And I'm not just talking about a little token camp where they go cook hot dogs and marshmallows for a day or two. I'm talking about really educating and getting them in the habit of understanding nature and around them. I really, truly believe, and you know, we're guilty at Ben's Ranch of being believers in the power of our nature around us, you know, of our the natural resources. And so I think there's going to be a lot of new ways to start connecting those dots. And to be honest, from a practical point of view, we need to also, because there are certain limits, regardless of this program's
name,
title, to the monies and the medical directors and the buildings. I mean, we can't get a handle on the scope of this problem in our society, which is so fundamental behind everything, without leveraging natural resources. We can't do it.
Well, and I want to, I'm going to ask you a question here, and then we've got more calls, so I'm going to try to pick up the pace here a little bit so we, because I can tell this matters to people. One of the things you mentioned you need was at the other end of the spectrum from Lori, which is host families.
Yes.
And you talked about the anxiety perhaps that parents would have. How do you go about vetting those host families and figuring out who will be there?
Yeah, great question. We've set up and we'll continue to refine, you know, ad infinitum screening processes, background checks. We take some chapter from the from other programs like those that are being adoption programs, temporary foster parenting programs. We're trying to learn from them and not reinvent that wheel. So we work hard on that side with our host families. And we look at a lot of factors. And we do the same on the kid side. We look at it more from the medical and the circumstances of, you know, can they handle the physical aspects? Will they be okay with separation from home? There's a lot of factors. It's complicated. And I believe we'll probably fail as often as we succeed in the early innings of this to refine that thinking. But what we do need, to back to your point, John, is we desperately need hosts. And that can be a farm family with kids in the home. It can be an empty nester. It could be someone growing tomatoes with a little, you know, truck stand down at the corner. Does not have to be some big fancy ranch with horses.
Out in Wyoming.
Yeah. Now, that's where it started. We have a ranch in Colorado waiting for a teen right now. Yeah. We have one in Vermont waiting. Yeah. It's a national program. You know, benefits Indiana disproportionately, but it's a national program. We'll serve kids from anywhere in the country, and we'll put them anywhere in the country. But we desperately need farm and ranch families and folks with maybe a therapeutic riding program or something to say, hey, I've got a place in the pickup truck or an empty bed in my home, and I've got a seat at the kitchen table three meals a day, and I've got room in my life to mentor a teen for a few weeks or a summer or, you know, whatever. That is going to take some guts, and we're having trouble with it. We're because we need the testimonials and the pioneers that are going to get out there and show that it can be done. It's not unlike, in a way, hosting a foreign student at your home or hosting the niece for the summer at the farm. But it's a little scary because mental health scares people.
So if there are people listening here, because there we reach a fair amount of farm country here in Indiana, and they want same thing, they go through the website to try to reach you?
Yeah, there's a tab, John, there on the site for parents who want to consider sending their kids to us. And number two, there's a tab dedicated to all the questions around hosting. And boy, If you're thinking about it or you're a little bit curious but you want to explore it, call us up and we'll walk you through it. And, you know, maybe it'll work for you, maybe it won't, but we need you.
Okay, and it's, again, bensranch.org.
You bet.
We are talking with Brose McVeigh about the new initiative he set up to honor his son's memory and to help young people who are struggling with mental illness by connecting them with animals and nature. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what William's done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. William, thank you for being persistent.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Yeah, I had a comment for your guest. Wanted to see if he'd heard of an organization out of Wisconsin. That's where I'm from. And years ago, an organization called Rawhide was started by Bart Starr that seems to have a very similar mission of helping troubled youth. And back in the day when they started, my brother currently works for them now. That's why I know a little bit about it, that they used to work, I think, partially on the self-esteem issue with, in addition to, taking them maybe out of a hostile environment for a little bit. Because I know they have a place called The Ranch that the kids can go to. But they also help them a little bit with kind of skills. Like a lot of times they would have people donate cars to kind of teach them how to fix cars and things like that. And I think they're updating that to more contemporary ideas. And I just want to see if your guest had heard of that organization or had any takeaways from that knowledge.
Thanks very much for the call, William.
William, thank you. I have not heard about it. I'm more and more taking inventory of programs like ours around the country, trying to study them, maybe do referrals back and forth, reaching out to some of them when we can. I don't know about Rawhide, and I'd love to learn more. So invite you, William, to shoot me a note through our website maybe, and I'll look it up for sure. Would love to meet your brother. The one thing I would just focus on for the audience that is, at least to begin with, distinguishes us a little from many of these is, you know, there's just no bad program that gets kids out there, whether they're in small groups, whether they're there for a day or a week, whether they're, there with doctors and counselors or not. But we want to add to that series of options by suggesting that for some kids, being mainstreamed in with a farm family, just feeling like they're there for a summer job or feeling like they're a part of that family for a while, has a unique benefit to it in our view, because it's not notable to those teens as a program for mental health problems. You know, it sort of is subtle, if you will, mm-hmm. And it allows those folks to learn skills on the farm definitely that might even translate into a vocation and a career path for them, which would be wonderful. But that's really not our design. They mm-hmm. may come back and decide they want to never see a farm again, and that's okay. But we want to, at least with this core program, to give us a scenario out there that's very affordable, but also gives these kids a chance to feel like they're growing personally out there, that they're not sick necessarily, and that they have to be around a lot of doctors and fences and so forth. So I think your audience will understand what I'm trying to get at there. I'm not very articulate about it, but we want to make sure that's in our mm-hmm. playbook, if you will, our toolkit. Then more residential programs where you have multiple kids in mm-hmm. an environment, whether it's to deal with something as tough as drug abuse or really heavy duty mental health problems, or maybe it's just something for kids that are acting up a little bit, or maybe it's just recreational and fun and educational. That whole spectrum is needed, mm-hmm. but we're trying to add a dimension, and it's notable because we're trying to do it in a way that leverages kind of the natural setting of a farm family or a ranch as opposed to a medical environment.
Mm-hmm. And how many young people do you anticipate you're going to be able to serve at the beginning?
Well, this summer, we're really inching into it carefully. We're screening carefully. We've had to reject some kids. We hope to do, you know, 5 or 10 this summer, and then we'll begin to pick up. We have a program we're working with Guest and Dude Ranches mm-hmm. to develop that will actually leverage their off-season this fall.
Okay.
We're getting ready to go out with that. Then as we get into next year, we're hoping to expand that pretty broadly and in the future, you know, be able to talk about hundreds and hundreds of kids around the country. Right now, we just feel like it's so critical that we get it right, that we're doing it in very baby steps. And it's just downright hard, to be honest. So we're also exploring some other ways we can help. For example, we have a teen that didn't meet our criteria because he has some pretty tough situation, but we're thinking about pairing him up for a day job at one of our farms in his area, okay. And mom's going to drive him over there every day, and we're going to let him prove and show that he wants to be out there. And then maybe we graduate him into this overnight program. So,
and does it work? I mean, what are the costs associated with doing this? Do you have to pay the host family something to cover the cost of having an extra mouth to feed, all of that?
We ask the host family. They get some help. You know, they get an extra set of hands and back to do chores, and it's pretty hard work. Some of these kids won't like the sweat and the sunburn, but that's what they'll be expected of. And then we do charge families a modest user fee, but we have a program where we will waive or discount that. So it can be something where we're actually paying for their travel costs and everything on top, and would be more than free for some eligible families. $500 a month for those that can afford it. And for most residential or summer programs we're watching, that's just a fraction of what they would pay for more traditional programming. So we're trying to make it, in effect, almost free for these families.
And this is, I want to bring this back to Ben, because he was the inspiration for this. At what point, and we've got, about a minute, I think, did the idea come to you that this was an appropriate way to honor his memory?
Well, you know, when we brought him home after 18 months on this ranch, it hit us throughout that experience that this is something that ought to be available to other kids. But only when we lost him 2 years ago did, within minutes, we know that we needed to go do this. And so his loss was really the catalyst that gave us sort of the courage to jump in. And, you know, this is a program we hope will have a preventative effect, prevention from suicide, prevention from drug abuse, prevention from suffering. We weren't able to get that completed with Ben, and we want to hopefully do better for others.
The organization, again, is Ben's Ranch Foundation. The URL is bensranch.org. I'd like to thank my guest, Brose McVeigh, both for setting the foundation up and for sharing his story and his son's story with us today on No Limits. Also like to thank our listeners, as always, for some great questions and comments, and for sharing this time with us. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.